The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2019 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2019. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at classicalchristian.org.
Good afternoon. Are you still awake? If you will, go ahead and have a seat and join me in prayer. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you for our time together today and for your abundant blessings on each of our schools. We ask that you'll abide with us during this session and that you'll use this time to inspire and motivate us in growing our schools in ways that will glorify you and will bear much fruit for the kingdom of God. For it's in Christ's name that we pray. Amen. Cicero, in his letters to Varro during the first century, said, "If you have a garden and you have a library, everything will be complete." So basically, he was saying, if you have a great book and you go out into a nice, quiet place in nature to read it, all is well with the world. And I have to agree with that. I'm Pamela McKee. I'm the head of school at Bayshore Christian School in Fairhope, Alabama. So I do want to thank you for coming to this session. I know it is late in the day. If you were up late last night, you're like me and a little bleary-eyed by this time of the day. And I'm opposite Louis Marcos, so, you know, with his great literature sessions. So thank you for being here. Let me ask you, how many of you are administrators in your schools? Okay, great. And how many of you are in a school that is less than 5 years old? Okay, a good number. Less than 10 years old. Okay, great, wonderful. Well, I hope that you can glean something from my ramblings today. When I told my husband about the late workshop, he said, well, just throw in some jokes. And I'm not a real joke teller, so I thought I'll ask a few questions, okay? These are gardening questions. So how many of you are gardeners? Okay, are you here because of the garden theme? Okay, all right. Well, here's the first question. If vegetarians eat vegetables, what do humanitarians eat? Good question. Okay, for those math and science people, what do you get if you divide the circumference of a pumpkin by its diameter? Think about it. Pumpkin pie. Very good. And then for grammar teachers, we have any grammar principles here? Okay. What does the letter A and flowers have in common? They both have bees coming after them. Ah, okay, you're waking up a little bit. You have to think about that. Okay, for those of you who are not gardeners, or you think, I really don't have a green thumb, you can empathize with the man who said, I have a rock garden. Last week, three of them died. That's more like me. Okay, I mentioned that I'm from Fairhope, Alabama, and for those of you who've not had the privilege of traveling in the South, Fairhope is at the very bottom of the state, down on the Mobile Bay, next to the Gulf of Mexico. So Fairhope is a quaint, artsy town that is known for its southern charm, its beautiful flowers, and the moss that is just dripping from the live oak trees. You've probably all seen pictures of that. It truly is a beautiful piece of God's creation. But I grew up in Alabama, and I learned gardening from both my parents and my grandparents. And I now live in this virtual paradise, garden of paradise, called Fairhope. And I've worked in education for almost 30 years, with 19 of those being right here with ACCS and in classical education. So as I've thought about it, I really believe that education is much like gardening. So that's what we'll talk about today. In their book, Garden Graces, George and Karen Grant acknowledge, this is what they say, across the ages, wise men and women have found a kind of universal revelation of life's profoundest truths in the doings of creation. Gardens have also therefore been for them laboratories of grace. Now, isn't that a wonderful description that we would love to use our love to be true of our schools? Not experiment houses, as C.S. Lewis referred to government education, but as laboratories of grace. Also, they said, not only do the images of the garden constantly recur in great art and music, literature, and ideas across the entire span of Western civilization, but gardens have also provided some of the world's greatest thinkers, writers, artists, and leaders with refuge and solace and inspiration as they've done great works. One of the most important aspects for educators to remember is that God chose to begin life where? In a garden, right? The Garden of Eden was perfection on earth, the most beautiful and the most bountiful paradise we could ever imagine. Eden was mankind's paradise, his utopia. And the features that God placed in the garden clearly show God's great love and care for us, for man's welfare, for our provision, security, and even our joy and happiness. The Hebrew word for garden is gan. It means a place that is enclosed, protected, and sheltered. It even carries with it the connotation of being covered and completely protected. Now, sometimes we hear a criticism about private education, right? That we put our children in a bubble. But I'm here to say that's not a bad thing. If God did it, it's good for us and it's good for our tender plants. So we want to provide the same things that God provided for us, for our students. And the Garden of Eden met man's need for beauty and man's need for social and emotional well-being, as well as providing the spiritual environment of walking with God. The truth, beauty, and goodness revealed in the Garden of Eden, the beauty of creation, the provision of physical well-being, and the presence of the living God are elements that we should seek to have and to promote in our schools, a safe, comfortable, joyful, beautiful, wholesome environment that provides a bounty of educational opportunities which engage the students and meet their needs. Many of you may have grown up tending gardens, or you've become a gardener over time. But, you know, we have to admit that going down to the local supermarket, or now that we know that Walmart will actually deliver groceries to your own home, it's much easier to take advantage of that, right? Rather than going to the effort, taking the time, and expending the labor to grow our own fruits and vegetables. Although I bet all of us would admit that homegrown always what? Tastes better, is more nutritious, and most of the time more economical. So although the general store's been around since America's been around, the first supermarket really showed up on the American landscape in 1946. That's not that long ago. It's really my parents and my grandparents' generation, really just my parents' generation. So just a couple of generations ago did people start purchasing their own foods from grocery stores. So before that, where was the food? The food was at home. The food was in your family's garden. or in your neighbor's garden, or in the local fields, or out in the pastures or in the forest. How many of you grew up going rambling through the woods to pick blackberries? You know, we had an apple tree in the back 40. We were just always having fruits and vegetables right there at home. It was near our kitchens, near our tables, and near our play areas. So food was in the pantry, in the cellar, and in the backyard. So I'm happy to say that now we're seeing a trend back to locally grown foods, right? Hopefully that's taking place in your hometown. It certainly is in Fairhope, and a real uptrend in farm-to-table restaurants. So I'd like to posit today that the call to return to that freshness, the health, the chemical-free garden can be similar to the call to classical education. Just as the mass production of foods with the added chemicals artificially inflate the size of our food and additives affect the color of our foods, research has shown that mass-produced education and today's educational trends have diminished the skills that we hold most dear, that of reading and writing and speaking and thinking. We need to get the garden back near the hearts and homes of our families. We need to build virtual pantries and virtual cellars, libraries of the minds in our school. So now among our schools, you think about a garden, and all gardens look a little different, don't they? And they should, just as each school will look a little different. If you look on the outside of a school, you're going to have some that are beautiful and formal. This is Regents Classical in Austin. How many of us would like that garden? Right? That's just gorgeous. Other schools are associated with churches. This is our church at Bayshore. So sometimes you'll be in a church building. Your garden will look like that. It's still beautiful, isn't it? And then there are more traditional schools. This is Cary Christian up in North Carolina. And then some of us are in basic metal buildings, right? Now, Genesis 1 tells us, the Lord God made every tree that was pleasant to the sight and good for food. Someone described gardens as sheltered places of great intimacy where you want to stay for a long time. So as administrators, we should be asking if our schools are representative of those three elements: beauty, discovery, and encounter with God. So first, we want to imitate our Father by providing those elements in every school, whether it is a beautiful building or a metal building, from the most grand down to the lowliest. Beauty can be added in your school. It could be an open field, a beautiful soccer field, maybe adjacent to your building. Open spaces, gardens, great art brought inside, as Dr. Turley just mentioned in his previous session. Bringing in plants to the inside of your classrooms and offices. Having pleasant music playing or other decor throughout your building. Now, when I arrived at Bayshore 6 years ago, they had just built a new building, and it's a metal building, so there's nothing beautiful about it on the outside. And as you walked in to the hallway, visitors found themselves in a hallway. And I watched visitors come in, and they would just kind of look around like, well, what do we do now? There was a window in the wall about this big, and that window had a little hole in it that you put your mouth up to and you say hello. And that was the reception area, okay? So one of my first acts as head of school was tear down this wall, right? So this was the hallway that you see, and we took the entire wall out and opened up a reception area. Now, that's during construction, but you can see that we added a few elements that made it look a little classical there. And then we brought in a new desk for the receptionist, and this is how it looks today. So, the other thing I had to do is replace the receptionist. You know, she really liked that wall. She liked her privacy. She liked that little hole so she wasn't disturbed. And so sometimes you have to do those things to bring in elements of beauty, both beauty in your facility and beauty in reception, in the warmth and welcoming. We should also strive to provide opportunities for discovery. This can be done in the form of nature trails, or just beautifying your playground. I want to tell you about this young man. His name is Max Jones, and he came and approached my grammar principal and I about a year ago, and he said, "May I build a new play structure for the playground?" Ours was rickety by that point. It was old and rickety. And he was going to do it for his Eagle Scout project. So we said, let us think. Yes. And so he built a beautiful new play structure for us. And you can see we placed it strategically near the live oak tree. So it brought a thing of beauty even to a playground. Now, other ways to beautify plain walls or classroom, I want to suggest that you add full-length wall maps to a classroom, to a hallway. You'll be really surprised at how many, not only students, but parents will stop and they'll research, they'll point out where they've been or where they'd like to go. And it just adds an element not only of intellectual beauty, but conversational beauty also. You might try adding your timeline to corridors. Many times our timelines are inside the classrooms, right? But our principal put our timeline in grammar school along the hallway. And that was a great thing of beauty and conversation also. Now, I want to tell you about this young lady. Her name is Tillery French. Tillery came to us. We have great students who just think of these wonderful ideas. She came and offered to build a series of lending libraries. We don't have a central library. All of our classrooms have their grade level libraries, and she suggested a lending library. And so this is one of several that will be used by different age groups, and they'll be placed near those classrooms. So again, it was a small, simple thing, but it added a little spark of beauty to our courtyard. And this year, due to continued growth, we've added 6 additional classrooms. Now, we didn't build 6 classrooms. We brought in some beautiful modular buildings. How many of you have even one modular building at your school? Okay. But you know what? We added front porches. We don't have the picture of that, but we added wooden front porches, and we added these winding sidewalks that meander down through the pine trees and went and now go to our cottages. The exteriors are simple, but we tried to add beauty by adding a planter beside them that's just overflowing with blooming flowers and ornamental trees. So that did help kind of camouflage it just a little bit and add some beauty. And as I mentioned earlier, what matters most is what happens on the inside of the modulars. You know that. What happens on the inside of the classroom. So this is inside one of them. And our teachers are very, very good in the grammar school to decorate walls and create beauty within the classrooms. And thirdly, and most importantly, leaders of schools should provide spiritual surroundings, a spiritual environment, and opportunities for students, as Adam and Eve did, to walk and talk with the Father. This should be reflected in classrooms and throughout our buildings. Students should observe teachers praying and praising. This is showing a time when our teachers got together to pray, but we pray every Monday morning in a classroom, and the bell rings and students walk by. They're usually a little loud, and we may end up closing the door, but they see us, they view us praying. It's very important and good for them. And of course, our teachers have morning devotionals. We have morning prayer during morning announcements over the intercom. But they should see you as the leaders of the school setting the tone that this is a place that where God abides. Fellowship with Christian athletes. Meet you at the pole events. Going on mission trips with the students and other intentional worship times. Now, the Garden of Eden's beauty and provision was bound to give man a sense of awe and a sense of worship. It stirred up the praise and the thanksgiving from within man's heart. And so the culture of our schools should intentionally invoke the same and should be visible to the school and evident in our policies and procedures. So following 7 years in the classroom and 2 as an administrator, back in the year 2000, I became the founding principal of Evangel Classical Christian in Birmingham, or near Birmingham. As many of you that are in new schools, we started out with a small group of 53 students. That's me way in the back left with a short haircut. Okay, so we have 53 students. I heard that. But over the following 13 years, God blessed our school, and we grew at 20% per year to 365 students by our 13th year. So the goals for growing that garden were simple, just like gardening. Select a good site, till the soil, plant the seed, water, fertilize, and tend. Easy, right? It would have been easy had we still been living in the Garden of Eden. But since sin had entered into the hearts of man, we were required to work by the sweat of our brows. Anyone who's tended a garden knows both the work that is required and the rewards at the end. 6 years ago, I joined Bayshore down in Fairhope. At that time, the school offered K through 9th grade, and there were 165 students. And over the past 6 years, again, God has blessed, and we have grown at about 17% per year to now having a projection of 425 in this next school year. So this is our class from this past year. Okay, the school from this past year. And another thing that we do is, this is a picture of a framed photo. Just like all gardeners, I like to brag about my garden, right? And you want to show it off. And so we have made a gallery. So each year we take a full group shot. We put the year on there, and then we have them all lined up. So you can see this next picture doesn't really show. It's one of those landscape photos I was trying to do this with, but it does show that we have a series of these pictures on our walls. So when you're giving tours, you can talk and show how God has grown your school over time. Okay, so as I discuss gardens today, I really am referring to the factors that you can somewhat control. Carefully choosing and being purposeful about the aesthetics of your building and your facility, planting the academic programs, the athletic and extracurricular activities, and tending the employees and spiritual culture that can help produce a godly crop of students. Now, you can look in Luke chapter 8. Jesus tells the story that we all know, right? The sower and the seed. A sower went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed, some fell along the path and was trampled underfoot, and the birds of the air devoured it. And some fell on the rock, and as it grew up, it withered away because it had no moisture. Some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up, and the cares of this world and the riches and pleasures choked it out. And some fell on good soil and grew and yielded 100-fold. These verses clearly identify the various conditions of our schools, right? We know that we have some hard soil. We know we have some rocks. We know we have some thorns. But we also know we have some good soil. And that's what we should be focusing on most often. As leaders, we have the opportunity and even the obligation to sow seeds in faith. Planting requires total faith. You do know that, right? You place this tiny little dry thing. It doesn't even look like a plant. It doesn't look like a tree. It doesn't look like any kind of fruit. It's a little dry thing, and you put it under the earth where you can't even see it. It takes great faith. And by faith, you believe that God will do his miracle and make it grow. So if you can supply the right elements, the good soil, the water, the sun, you can and should expect a good return on your efforts. We should expect our schools to grow. We should expect 30, 60, even 100-fold. So as God calls you to grow your schools, consider these points. First is selecting a good site. Okay? Now, this is a tiny little garden at my house. It is very small, but it's very manageable. Okay? You have to choose the site for your garden. Garden magazines will tell gardeners to choose the right site and plant in a sunny location. Basically, you'll need to ask, does our local church, our local churches support a Christian school, a Christian ministry? Do you have the support of Christian parents in your community? And having a town hall meeting will tell you that. And having conversations with community leaders and civic leaders will really start stirring up interest in your Christian school and make it more of a sunny location. We know that the more sunlight gardens receive, the greater the harvest, the bigger the veggies, and the better the taste. So your school should be planted in a stable environment, a sunny environment, and a supportive environment. Next, you'll want to determine the size of your plot, like my little box there. One box is full of mint, the other box is full of basil and a few other peppers and things like that. But you have to decide, how large will your school be? How large is your plot? Now, your board will determine the overall size of your school based on enrollment or re-enrollment records and the facility that you have available. But determine your class size, your student-teacher ratios, and your long-term strategic plan, and then work your plan. Avoid overcrowding. And that's a hard one. When the plants are growing in and they're becoming big and abundant, I remember never wanting to thin out the sprouts when they first started coming up in the rows in our garden at home, but my dad would take out his hoe and he would chop those tender little sprouts and give the best and the healthiest plants more room to grow. It was a hard lesson for me. I think it still is. I want everybody to be there. But we have to start small. We have to maintain our ratios. We have to cut out unnecessary programs that don't further our mission. And then we will watch our school thrive. Remember this, it's better to be proud of a small garden or small school rather than be frustrated by a big one. I know we all want to grow, but with growth can come lots of frustration. Next, tilling is required. Part of tilling is breaking up hard ground, right? That's basically what it is. And hard ground can be formed by a lot of rain coming in and just packing down. And over time, that soil becomes hard. So tilling the soil really is happening as you tell the story of classical education. As you tell the story of Christian education, hearts are moved by those stories. And the soil of the hearts begin to soften. So tilling will offend some people, right? Have you ever been giving a tour and you could just kind of read the expression of, I don't know that I really want that. That's a little too Christian for me, you know? Keep talking. Just keep talking. Because God can use his word to till the soil of the heart. If you're a new leader and you're going into an established school, you'll have to do a lot of tilling, okay? It may require tilling of some programs and curriculum. You may encounter some pushback from well-established employees who want to continue doing things like we've always done them, right? Even though their garden may not be thriving. But don't hesitate to till the soil, to do the right thing, even if it means firing a troublesome teacher who may have been there over a long time. But when teachers are worth keeping, you know, have you ever planted a plant and it just didn't do well in that spot? You know, you don't just kill the plant, right? You know, well, I have taken them out and thrown them away sometime. But basically, you think maybe it will do better over here in a shadier area, or maybe it would do better over here where it gets more water or better drainage. And so when teachers are worth keeping and they may have simply fallen into poor habits or they need a little revival and renewing of their purpose in the garden, go ahead and help them. That too will till the soil of their heart that may be resistant to a new leader. Give them some special attention. Reorganize, move them to a new location in the school building, just a better location in your garden. Just remember that tilling the soil is hard work, and roots that have been established go very deep, and you have to do it in order not to be too disruptive. You have to do it slowly and respectfully and intentionally. And more importantly, you have to do it annually. It's not one time and I'm done, right? You have to keep tending. So then you will want to select your plants. Now, a good gardener plans their garden well ahead of planting season. You know that. They'll spend hours scouring seed catalogs and reading articles on which plants grow best together. They'll order just the right variety of seedlings, and they'll spend hours meandering down up and down the aisles of the local nursery, carefully choosing the most healthy plants. They plan their garden, and they choose the harvest that they're desirous of. So they think of, what do I want to eat, right? What do I want to eat when the harvest comes in? What do I want to prepare? So do they want to create annual traditions like me of blueberry picking with my grandson? That's why I planted blueberry bushes. I want to establish that tradition. Do they love fresh tomatoes? They'll plant tomatoes. If their goal is to cook a big pot of gumbo and have friends over for a big shrimp boil like we have down in Fairhope, if so, then they're going to plant okra and onions and peppers and corn. We plant what we love. Is that right? We plant what we love. At my house, we love blueberries and we love figs. So I have a big fig tree. And in your schools, you plant what you love. The same is true for all of us. We must decide what we value and what we love. We'll begin our garden with the harvest in mind. We must know and understand our mission and our vision for our students. And we must know the goals for each grade level also. Those are like little mini gardens. Every classroom is a garden also. So you have to know the goals of Christian classical education. It is then that we carefully choose the curriculum, establish policies and procedures, communicate our standards, and begin traditions that will be produced. Many gardens have elements of usefulness as well as aesthetic beauty. Some gardens are rose gardens. Some gardens are surrounded by beautiful flowers on the outside with vegetables on the inside. A school should be the same. Beautifully laid out, organized, peaceful, filled with variety, a manageable size, and a reflection of what you love. Don't forget, you will need to plant the plants that repel the pests and repel predators around the edges. So have a very good security system, and plan for your school. State your goals in your brochures and other printed collateral, as well as on your website, and clearly communicate them to teachers and parents. Hire only teachers, administrators, and staff that will help you achieve those goals. Do you annually lose faculty or maybe a few families? Evaluate why. Now, they may just simply be plants that don't do well in your culture, okay? So don't force what doesn't fit, but always evaluate yourself. Evaluate your soil. With exit interviews and having ongoing relationships with parents who leave your school so that they'll honestly give you feedback. And if your school is lacking in areas, say you have weak academics or a lack of spiritual leadership, or maybe there are some people that are just unfriendly there, take an honest assessment of those conditions and the feedback. As the leader of the school, it's your job to do that. It's your job to check the condition of your soil. And think outside the box. Think of something new. Try something new. You know, in your garden, you might choose to try one new vegetable this year. So try new things. Use your imagination or imitate another great school to remedy the problems. Try simple changes, as gardeners do. Don't just overhaul the whole thing. Perhaps play music in the front office if it's not warm and welcoming. Or pipe that music to the outer courtyard. That's always fun. Or add a happy bulletin board in a dark hallway that needs a little brightening up. Do you need an infusion of joy in your school? Then as you're recruiting teachers and interviewing teachers, hire that teacher that reminds you of Mrs. Frizzle from the Magic School Bus, right? Have students share a joke of the day during the morning announcements, but you give them the jokes, all right? Bring in excellent speakers. What culture are you aiming to grow in your school? You are shaping, as we're learning in this conference, you're shaping, planting affections and virtues and moral imaginations. And we often acknowledge the nature of God in our students. And we talk about them having the image, being made in the image of God and having his creativity. But many times we fail to apply those expectations to ourselves. Okay? So turn that around to yourself. Say, God has made me in his image. God has given me creativity. And then a good question that I like to ask is, what would a brand new head of school, principal, whatever your position is, what if someone brand new came in, this whippersnapper of a leader, what would they change? What would they do? What would they add? And then you do it. Right? You become that whippersnapper leader and try those things. Now, the next thing I want to say is be ready and open for surprises. One year, a friend gave me some squash plants. He gave me 3 squash plants that he had left over from planting his garden. So I took them home and I planted the 3 plants and faithfully watered them, and they began to produce and just grow and grow and grow. They were huge and beautiful. Well, 2 of them produced lovely yellow squash. But the 3rd plant grew bigger and bigger and bigger, but no yellow squash at all. Day after day, I would check, I would check for just even a glimpse of a yellow squash. Nothing. I was watering it. I was doing everything the same as the other plants. Nothing. So I was showing this to my son one day, kind of complaining about this big old plant that looked healthy but bore no fruit. And he poked around and he said, "Mom, you're looking for the wrong thing. Look at this." And I went over and there was the largest, greenest zucchini I had ever seen. It was as long as a baseball bat. It was long and skinny. And this plant wasn't a squash plant at all. It was a zucchini plant. And it had been growing there all along, day after day. I was looking for one thing, but God was providing another. So sometimes you'll be surprised with the fruit that you grow. So remain open to new ideas and new programs. We even experienced this with one of our students. We had a young man who was just different. Do you ever have those students? Just a little odd, okay? Kind of a lot of odd. Actually, he was quirky but smart. He was extremely shy. He was untidy. He was unorganized. And he even had an imaginary friend in 6th grade. Now, his awkwardness and his unusual behaviors caused his classmates to be uncomfortable and uneasy around him, and it was really difficult for him to make friends. So here was this unusual plant in the garden. But during his 6th grade year, we tried planting a new plant. We tried adding a geography bee. Unbeknownst to us, this quirky kid loved geography. So he won his class competition, and he was on the stage for the school competition in front of the entire school. He answered question after question correctly, knocking out the competition one by one. The audience, which was the school body, was going wild. They had never seen this side of this kid. They had never heard him speak. And yet here he was, knocking out the competition, and they were rooting him on. Then he won the competition, and the whole school was on its feet cheering for him. And he was beaming. Congratulations were given out from all grade levels, and he has never been the same. He's never been the same. He no longer needed an imaginary friend. His shyness turned into smiles and high fives as he walked down the halls. And now, he is one of our most talented theater club participants. His mom commented to me right after the geography bee and said, "The school didn't know that geography was his superpower, but God did." So try new plants, try new programs, remain open for surprises in your garden. Now, next, the best gardeners know that they have to choose high quality seed. So be picky about who you accept into your school. Now, I don't mean this in any kind of elitist manner, but in a clear and concise and well-defined way. Be a good gatekeeper. Utilize parent interviews, check references, require pastoral references, and test and interview incoming students. Keep your school culture in mind. As your school grows, are you aiming for that pot of gumbo? Or do you want a fruit salad? Or do you want both? We all know that plants like green beans and tomatoes and other plants require staking up, right? You have to build some supports. And so do you have to do that in schools. In the form, sometimes for students, in the form of scholarships, financial aid, getting some guidance counseling, getting tutorial services for them, or offering Latin camp before school begins. All of those are good support systems for your students. These and many other programs will help support those plants that would otherwise fall down. The same goes for your teachers, too. Support your teachers. Train them well. Provide scaffolding and support for them. Grow a training library of CDs and DVDs. You can get them from ACCS. You can go on the ACCS website, and there's just a plethora of training. You could go to the Society for Classical Learners and get CDs or become members of Classical U. Show Harry Wong videos. How many of you know Harry Wong? Okay, show Harry Wong. He's kind of timeless. And utilize the many services that are available now online. So support means meeting the teacher's needs, whether that is their spiritual needs, their professional advancement needs, and sometimes financial needs. So talk to your teachers. They won't be shy to tell you what they need. And then take a look, kind of see what they are purchasing themselves, see what items they're having to borrow from the teacher down the hall, and then just see how much time they're spending after school. Try to meet their needs too. Remember Proverbs 3:27. It says, "Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in your power to act." Okay? Support your teachers. Another support I want to mention right quick, it's not one we talk about very often, but it's something we need at Bayshore, it's something probably every school needs, is to train your substitute teachers. Would you agree with that? Sometimes we just get that list and we call them in and we just are glad there's a warm body in the class, right? But they need support. They're going to be those plants that fall over. Sometimes in the middle of the day, they're going to fall over. And so just offering a planned substitute training. A vine left unto itself will grow wild. True? And students left with a sub will be wild. We know that. And untrained substitute teachers are just a sad condition at the end of the day. And the stories that go home to parents are, you know, very interesting around the dinner table that night. So give your subs clear direction, communicate your expectations, and have them observe your strongest teacher's classroom before they go on your sub list, okay? So give them that staking up that they need. You might need to develop a teacher mentoring program, having new teacher training, and as I mentioned before, a guidance counselor is an unbelievably wonderful stake to have in your school garden. This past year, we tried another new plant at Bayshore, and we are partnering with the University of Mobile for some dual enrollment classes. We offered four teachers qualified to teach the dual enrollment classes. They're teaching exactly what we had taught before. The university came over, looked at our classes, looked through our curriculum, our scope and sequences, and said, "That's equivalent to what we're doing in our freshman year." So our students have earned 138 credits just in this year alone toward their freshman year of college. And that's really an equivalent of about $130,000 that we're saving their parents by having this program. So if you have a qualified Christian college in the area, you might consider that. It's been a true blessing for us. Next, every garden requires water right? And of course, we all know that the Word of God is the living water. So water your plants liberally. But think about it, not too much and not too little. That will give them the best chance of forming well-rounded, mature fruit. But do it consistently. Welcome the Spirit of God into your school on a daily basis through those morning prayers and devotionals, but also chapel and in colloquy, which are deep discussions that students gather to have. I visited the Oaks in Spokane, Washington earlier this year. Their students gather every Monday morning in their gym and they sing worship songs all together. And then they go to class and they do it again on Friday afternoon before they go home. And so it's two times of true worship that the entire school comes together as bookends to their week to worship the Lord. And just as in a garden, just as in a garden, school leaders must deal with the weeds, right? This is not the fun part we like to talk about, but there are pesky problems on a daily basis. And the point is, you can't ignore the weeds, even though we want to. We just really want to ignore that. Look the other way, not do anything about it. But my advice is go ahead, pull out your hoe, and chop a few of those weeds every day, and they won't overtake you. This task can get away from you very quickly if you don't do it daily. And be sure that you're requiring your teachers to do it daily in their classrooms when it comes to uniform infractions or staying on schedule. A lot of those things that we might consider little things, they become weeds that grow up. And so deal with those and have them dealt with by nipping them in the bud. Another thing is deal with the parent questions or parent inquiries, parent problems as quickly as possible. Give them a phone call. Just pick up that phone, even when you don't want to. Even when you think, oh, this is going to be a long conversation, I don't want to get into it now. It's better to go ahead and have a short conversation with a promise of getting back with them than to walk away and ignore or just delay that conversation. So Christian parents want biblical schools that are going to handle those problems well. And as a leader, that's really our job to do those hard things. But then there's the feeding of your garden, okay? Enriching your soil provides needed nutrients. My mom was a great gardener, and she taught me to use this stuff called Miracle-Gro. Any of you use Miracle-Gro? Yeah. She and I could plant the very same flower in our two homes, and hers would outgrow mine twice over. It was simply that she enriched her soil. So enriching means improving. We will never be perfect, right? Our schools will never be perfect. But we can improve, and we can improve a little bit every year. So enrich your academic programs, offer extracurricular activities. We show here our Master Center is our after-school program, and so we have some non-academic things that are happening after school that you can see there. We just hire teachers to come in, not our classroom teachers, but other outside people to come in and teach these different elections. And it really serves to enrich our program. A lot of our children do stay after school because parents are working a little later, and this gives them something to do in the afternoons for just a little extra added fee. And then consider during the school day with your electives, adding some fun non-academic electives like archery or weightlifting, culinary skills, or this year we have fencing. That's been fun to add. Establish engaging competitions like math club competitions. Our chess club goes to competitions. And a couple years ago, our mock trial went to competition and actually, to everyone's surprise, won the state won first place in the state competition and went to nationals. You may have read or heard about the classical school in Tennessee who won the national competition this year. And so those always enrich the culture of your school just by trying something new and different. You might offer a senior retreat, or go ahead and start, if you haven't already, offering a senior grand tour. Give and offer engaging field trips, fun fellowships. Our grammar principal began a book club or a book swap this year. Bring in lecturers to give a lecture series. Invite teachers to special church events like ladies' retreats and luncheons and concerts in the park, other free activities, so that you're enriching your social aspects of your school also. And then we want to think about Andrew Campbell's great article, Multa Non Multas, that reminds us that doing fewer things very well is best. Basically, that less is more. In the garden, if you pack those plants too tightly, they're going to compete for sunlight, they're going to compete for the water and the nutrients, and they're going to fail to mature to their greatest capacity. So gardeners have to pay attention to those spacing guidelines, the same as we do in all of these fun things that we're talking about. Pick and choose. In the same way, pay attention to overcrowding, know your space limitations, and the effect that they have on the teaching that occurs. Keep an eye on that. Offer, if you find yourself crowded, as we did last year, we had to get a little inventive and creative with our scheduling, and so we offered two different lunch time slots. Really, I think three, maybe. We had a grammar, and then we had logic, then we had the rhetoric lunch periods, and that helped divide that overcrowding during lunchtime. We're having to divide our house groups into smaller groups as we grow too. So pay close attention and don't hesitate to prune away any dead limbs or programs that have outlived their time. I know for years I loved having popsicles at the playground. That was a summer activity of getting all the grammar kids together and all their parents for fellowship in the middle of the summer. What happens in Fairhope in the middle of the summer outdoors is everyone just melts away, just like a popsicle. And so it kind of outlived its day, and we went with, again, our principal, our new principal at that time, said, why don't we not have popsicles? Let's do an indoor back-to-school social. And I was reluctant because I had done that. I was kind of set in my ways, too. But she convinced me. We tried it. We let go of something, a dead limb that needed to be pruned from our garden. So look for those in your school. Are you forcing something? Are you just offering things that no one is still, interested in? Go ahead and snip those off and watch the new growth. I'm going to show you a picture here of a couple other plants in my house. The one on the left, I did not prune. The one on the right, I did prune. You see the difference? I know we think, well, there's still some good life at the top of that big tall one. I hate to cut that off. But look at all the space in between the top and the bottom leaves. It's wasted space there. And so when I trimmed the other one back, it just blossomed out. And so that's what I think will happen in your school. So in conclusion, 1 Corinthians 3:6 tells us, I have planted, Apollos has watered, but God gave the increase. So a garden requires patience, dedication, and daily attention. Plants don't grow from good intentions, do they? They grow because someone expended effort on them. Someone worked by the sweat of their brow. The increase is up to God. Your job is to plant to water, to fertilize, and to prune programs and people with the hope and the intent of pleasing the Lord. When you do this, God will give the increase. Thank you.